Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters the most in life, our mind, our thoughts, our feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Now, in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about the line getting increasingly blurry when it comes to autism diagnosis. And then I will speak to Ron Sanderson, the author of A Parent's Guide to Autism, A Practical Advice. Ron Sanderson himself has autism in the spectrum, and he is the founder of Spectrum. So it'd be an interesting conversation to have with him from his own experience and what he can tell us and all of the parents out there about how to treat their children and how to parent their children who have autism. You can call us on this studio line if you'd like to speak to me or Ron, 951-922-3532. And be sure to listen to my podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and share it with your friends and tell them to send it, listen to it and give me a review. For all of you guys, please give me a review. Go to fujian.com and write me a note. Either text me or email me in what are the topics that you like to hear and for us to chat about. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
So here's the tip of the week. I've been working on the concept of authenticity with my clients, with myself, all of it this week. So first, let's define, what is authenticity? I know that we hear this word a lot recently. So being real, being and acting based on who you really are. Authenticity is about presence, living in the moment with conviction and confidence and staying true to yourself. So how could you stay true to yourself? How do you define who yourself is? With the awareness integration model, you can utilize the steps to see who the authentic you is. Now begin observing your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors and the impact that it has on yourself and others. Through this observation, you will see your strengths, shortcomings, and dualities. More than anything, your dualities. This is where you can utilize your strengths to support your shortcomings. Yeah, I mean, when you look at yourself, there's so many strengths that you have. That's what's pulled you through. And yes, there are areas that you are vulnerable at. And the recognition of that, you could take the strengths and help the other side. Or you can learn skills to support your shortcomings or vulnerabilities. You can also work through your dualities and bring them together or align them. We all have dualities. There's a part of us that needs or some needs or wants a desire or something. And then obviously another part that completely needs and desires something opposite, or that our desire pulls us through a particular act. And our principles or what we think we should or what the society expects us could be completely something else. And that's how dualities get created. But if we're not really looking at who we are and what our passion is and what our desire is and bring those two together, how is it that we can actually be and do and have what we really want and yet have the other part of us, which is also important, whether it's wanting the acknowledgement of others, wanting to be with others, which might be different to it within our desire. So sometimes it's like, you know, there are selfish parts of us and then all of the self actualized part of us, and the two of them would create a lot of dualities. But the authenticity is really acknowledging the two parts and either bringing them together, aligning them, or choosing one part of it. Now, when it comes to choosing the principles that you want to operate from and act on those principles, regardless of the circumstances, it what brings you in an authentic place. So when your thoughts, feelings, actions align, is where you live your authenticity. Your authentic self is the accumulation and a wholesome of all your parts and the values that you hold. There's an unshakable inner power, literally an unshakable inner power you will live when you live your authenticity. It's an amazing feeling. That's why I call it unshakable, because the fear and anxiety is not necessarily there when you are being authentic to yourself. Because even if there's a fear and anxiety about a part of you that's vulnerable, unknown and all of that, your little reliance and knowledge of your strength will pull you up, and that's where the power shows up. So, you know, live authentically. It's the you that needs to live, and expressing yourself from all of that. And trust me, when people know you as someone authentic, they trust you, they can rely on you, and they give much easier of themselves to you because they also trust you because of your authenticity. So live your authentic self. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the latest research.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
So, is it autism? The line is getting increasingly blurry. So, around the world, the number of people diagnosed with autism is rising. In the United States, the prevalence of the disorder has grown from 0.05% in 1966 to more than 2% today. In Quebec, the reported prevalence is close to 2%. However, Dr. Mortrin, a professor at Université de Montréal, Department of Psychiatry, has serious reservations about this type of data. So after studying meta-analysis of autism data, his research team found that the difference between people diagnosed with autism and the rest of the population is actually shrinking. The study is published August 21, 2019 in JAMA Psychiatry. Dr. Mortrin worked with the University of Copenhagen and four other researchers from France, Denmark, and Montreal to review 11 meta-analyses published between 1966 and 2019 with data drawn from nearly 23,000 people with autism. The meta-analysis showed that people with autism and people in the rest of the population exhibit significant differences in seven areas: emotion recognition, theory of mind, ability to understand that other people have their own intention, cognitive flexibility, the ability to transition from one task to another, activity planning, inhibition-evoked responses, and the nervous system's response to sensory stimulation, and brain volume. So together, these measurements cover the basic psychological and neurological component of autism. Dr. Mortrin and his team looked at the effect size, the size of the differences observed between people with autism and people without it, and compared its progression over the years. This measurement is a statistical tool that quantifies the size of differences in the specific characteristics between two groups of subjects. They found that in each of the assessed areas, the measurable difference between people with autism and people without it has decreased over the past 50 years. In fact, A statistically significant dilution in effect size was noted in 5 of these 7 areas. The only 2 measurements that didn't show significant dilution were inhibition and cognitive flexibility. This means that across all disciplines, the people with or without autism who are being included in studies are increasingly similar. If this trend holds, the objective difference between people with autism and the general population will disappear in less than 10 years. So the definition of autism may get too blurry to be meaningful and trivializing the actual condition, because we're increasingly applying the diagnosis to people whose differences from the general population are less pronounced. To verify that the trend was unique to autism, the research team also analyzed data on similar area from studies on schizophrenia. They found that the prevalence of schizophrenia has stayed the same, and the difference between people with schizophrenia and those without it is increasing. So the diagnostic criteria for autism haven't changed over the years, that the differences have diminished. Instead, Dr. Mutra believes that what has changed are diagnostic practices. 3 of the criteria for an autism diagnosis are related to sociability. He said 50 years ago, 1 sign of autism was a lack of apparent interest in others. Nowadays, it's simply having fewer friends than others. Interest in others can be measured in various ways, such as making eye contact. But shyness, not autism, can prevent some people from looking at others. To complicate matters, the term autism has fallen out of favor, replaced by autism spectrum disorder, a sign that there's a new belief that there are various different forms of the condition exist. This has prompted some people to question whether autism exists at all. And yet, autism is a distinct condition. Our study shows that changes in diagnostic practices, which have led to false increase in prevalence, are what's fueling theories that autism doesn't really exist. So even though Dr. Motrin recognizes that there's a continuum between people with autism and those without it, he believes that such a continuum could result from the juxtaposition of natural categories. Autism is a natural category at one end of the socialization continuum, and we need to focus on this extreme if we want to make progress. He said that in his opinion, autism studies include too many participants who aren't sufficiently different from people without autism. In contrast to the generally prevailing scientific belief, Dr. Morton thinks that including more subjects in studies on autism as it is currently defined reduces the likelihood of discovering new things about the mechanism of the disorder. No major discoveries have been made in this field in the last 10 years. And as you know, the numbers of being diagnosed with autism and autism spectrum is really, really rapidly growing. So the way that they research on it seems to be needs to be changed so that we could actually get some answers on this. So don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back with Ron Sanderson, who's the author of A Parent's Guide to Autism, A Practical Advice. Ron has been actually diagnosed with autism spectrum, and he has been experiencing it all of his life, and he's going to let us know. And he's written a book about how to create more social skills, and tell the parents in how to be with their children. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
Dr. Fujian Zane is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Take KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the Awareness Integration Model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Take KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I'm excited to have Ron Sanderson, who's an author of The Parent's Guide to Autism, a Practical Advice. He works full-time in the medical field and is a professor of theology at Destiny School of Ministry. He's an advisory board member of Autism Society Faith Initiative of Autism Society of America. So welcome to my show, Ron.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on your show. It's great to be on your show.
Oh, it's wonderful. I was reading actually through your website a bit, and I was reading through your kind of life history. Would you mind letting our audience and listeners know that what your experience have been with autism?
Well, thanks. I'd love to share my experience with autism. I was diagnosed with autism in 1982. When I was diagnosed with autism in 1982, only one in every 10,000 people were diagnosed with autism. Now it's that one in every 59 children will be diagnosed with autism in the U.S. and one in every 37 males. So it's much more prominent in males than in females. 3 out of every 4 people with autism diagnosed are males. And autism affected me with communication ability. My development was so delayed with my speaking that my brother Chuck, when I was 7 years old, would introduce me to people saying, "You need to meet my brother Ron. I think he's from Norway." And he'd have me talk, and no one could understand what I was saying. It also affected my ability to socially interact with other children. I had very few friends all through middle school until I got to high school and became a star track runner. And then I made friends with the people on the track team and my teammates, and the rest is history, you could say.
Definitely. As I was reading through, I was really impressed, not only with who you were, but also the way that you said that your mom had held a particular way of belief about you and about how to take you from one milestone to another. And she wasn't just going to take no for an answer from other people or that the way they were approaching you. So that was it was great. So I wanted you to also share about your experience with your mom's parenting and the way she took the initiative to bring you, or let's say observe you and trust you and go with what was important for you. And like you said, then the rest is history, because obviously the results shows.
Yeah, my mom noticed I had a great ability for memorization. I can quote word perfect over 10,000 Bible verses. I can also quote the whole book of Mark from Greek into English. And I also can quote over 5,000 quotes. And when I was younger, I could tell you every fact about every animal in the U.S. And my mom knew I had a great memory ability, but she noticed I had very little ability to learn things the way conventionally children normally learned. And she was an art teacher, and she quit her job as a full-time art teacher and became a full-time Ron teacher. And what she did is she'd have me draw pictures of animals, which were my special interest and passion as a child. And then she'd have me tell her stories. She'd write down the stories, have me rewrite the stories using her handwriting as a guide. And within 2 years of doing that, from age 5 to age 7, I was able to read at a normal age level. And I also was able to be able to comprehend writing. I went from having dyslexia to no dyslexia and be able to write straight and be able to write words out, because I couldn't learn anything phonetically, but only visually. And Temple Grandin, the most famous person in the world with autism, says 90% of people with autism are visual learners, and less than 1% can learn phonetically.
Beautiful. So what was your biggest challenge having autism?
My biggest challenge having autism was being able to communicate. I have very little ability to communicate my needs, my feelings. When I meet people, I had zero eye contact. And my master's degree is a master of divinity, and my undergrad is in theology and psychology. So working with people, having degrees for working with people, not having any eye contact was a real challenge.
I bet, yes.
The last 13 years have I been able to perfect having eye contact and be able to look people in the eye. And speaking at over 70 events a year, speaking at over 20 conferences a year, has enabled me to learn those skills with working one-on-one with people. And I've also now worked 11 years in the mental health field, leading groups. So that's developed those gifts. So that now when people see me, I automatically have eye contact. It's become a second nature. But for a long time, I had difficulty understanding social norms too. And when I, in 1996, I was working in a car wash when I was in college, and Wayne Fonts, the head coach of the Lions, who was fired, came in the day he was fired, and I had him a job application because I heard he was in need of a job.
That's
so
great.
I have trouble understanding things that are abstract, and I'm a total literal thinker. So when people saw him pull in, they're like, "He needs to get a job. He just got fired." So I went to help him out and got him that job application. Needless to say, he was speechless when he saw a job application from a young adult.
Well, this is what something that I was actually thinking before meeting you today, which is two of the biggest challenges. One is, like you said, the social ability of being among people, eye contact, and connection to other human being is one of the challenges that most people who are diagnosed with autism have. And then the other one is exactly what you said, abstract thinking, where one of the ways that I know in my with my clients, many times I experience beyond the connection of one to one, it's also the literal aspect. Like when I ask questions that are a little bit more abstract and, you know, my clients kind of stop and look at me and only give me a very specific answer to what I ask, literally to the question, and not really take on the bigger picture, usually is when I look at and try to rule out autism. So, and then it's interesting because then you went into theology, which is all abstract. So it's interesting. Like now you are a speaker, you go around the world and speak to everyone, you connect to people as a minister. And you chose a field that is completely abstract and everything about it is abstract. So let's talk about going from one extreme to the other by you learning these, the challenges that were there and learning the skills and moving one by one and actually going to the other side of it, which is creating a mastery of it.
Yeah, I actually published my second book. It's on theology, and the actual title of it is Thought, Choice, Action. So it's so, and it's an abstract book because the book is on St. Augustine, and St. Augustine is one of the most abstract theologians of our time. And what's interesting is that even the great theologian St. Augustine in the 4th century noticed that there was night neurodiversity and wrote on neurodiversity. And the way he describes neurodiversity is this way. My mentor, St. Ambrose, is a genius. He's able to read without reading out loud. And in the 20th century, everyone who can read without reading out loud. But in the 4th century, during the time St. Augustine wrote, only 5% of the Roman Empire could read. And those were the educated people. Now that 5%, only about 7 to 10% could read without reading out loud. Where everyone today who can read without reading out loud, which shows we're neurodiverse from the 4th century. And that's part of the reason I chose to share his insight in my second book. And he also had a great idea called the tripolarity theory, that every event has three main causalizations: good, which is God; evil, which is the devil or some evil enmity; and then three, choice. And that our interaction between good and evil determines our perspective of how we view things. And it's a very abstract idea, but when you meet people, usually they see events in one of those three ways of occurring.
So how did you practice going from the type of a literal thinking toward abstract thinking?
I started to become more abstract in my thinking as I became more educated. I started reading a lot. I've read over 1,000 books during the last 10 years. I've also, with speaking more one-on-one with people, I started to learn what sarcasm is, learn what figure of speech is, and learn how to tell the difference. And also I've learned, once I started having better eye contact, I started learning how to interpret body language, and being able to do that has been able to enable me to think more abstract and realize sometimes you got to filter what you say. I look back at some of the things I've said over the years and how embarrassing they are now. One time I was asked with a job interview in Flint, where there's a high murder rate of over, at the time there was about 40 murders a year in Flint. They asked, have you ever been involved in urban ministry? And I said, is that where you put on a bulletproof vest for physical protection and the spiritual armor for spiritual protection? Needless to say, I didn't get that job. So I've learned over the years to stop and think about what the actual question is and then to interpret it the right way.
Got it. What is autism refined and not cured? Do you mean more like this is a condition that needs to be managed for a lifetime and just get better and better at it versus having a concept of thinking that, you know, it's a common cold or something that you'll just take something and it's going to be cured.
Yeah, autism cure doesn't happen. You don't just leave being autistic. You're always going to be autistic, but you can refine the abilities, your gifts you have, and make them into gifts for independence, employment. What I mean by autism refined is this, is you're walking on the hot black pavement to go to the beach, and all of a sudden you step on a piece of glass on your bare foot. It's jagged, it's sharp. Autism unrefined for me was little ability to have social interaction. It was a lack of ability to communicate with people. It was a lack of understanding social norms, and it was also a lack of being able to filter what I'd say. As much like our president, Donald Trump, what came into my mind, I just say it and not think before I'd speak. But autism refined is now you're off that hot black pavement, you're walking along the ocean, and all of a sudden your feet feel something smooth. It's a piece of glass that's been refined by something greater than itself, by the ocean. And that smooth piece of glass you put on your neck as jewelry, you put it on as the wall as art. And that's what my mom was determined to do with me, take that jaggedness, and through educating me and through helping me learn to be able to communicate, to be smoother in my transition and dealing with people and interacting with people, so I'd be able to have friends. And I, through friends, I'd be able to have employment. And through employment, I'd be able to have independence. So it was the idea that through ABA therapy, through speech therapy, occupational therapy, and the different resources out there to refine a kid's ability so that he's able to gain more independence. And independence is going to be different for each kid on the spectrum. Some independence is not biting the group home co-workers or workers there, and others it's going to be able to communicate and be able to have a job. Not everyone with autism will have a job.
So one of the things I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is many of the things you said is a natural perspective of what any child has to go through, any human being has to go through in order to be a successful adult, let's say, a functioning adult. The difference is that the neurological aspect of someone who does not have autism has the capacity where the person can learn through mimicking from others and just watching and being among peers at school, learning many of these skills, and their brain has the capacity to take in whatever the teacher is. So in relation with humanity and human being, in the bigger picture, a human being with autism goes through this every day and learns and moves forward. But someone who has been diagnosed with autism, and depending on where they are in the spectrum, they need a little, because their brain doesn't naturally pick up from the environment and code it and take it in. They have to be supported and helped more in each and every one of those areas specifically, and be given more attention in that area so that someone with an autism can learn each one of these skills and move forward, versus just expecting them to learn it in a bigger environment of the school and peers. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, but the difference between autism too is this, is with typical neurodevelopment, there's a steady pace. With autism, there may not be an ability to communicate for years, and all of a sudden that ability pops up and they're able to communicate. And I think that's key too, but you keep moving them in the area of helping them as much as you can, and then leave the results up to where they'll end up being on the spectrum. Because the spectrum, as you mentioned, is huge. You have people who are nonverbal, you have people who are so verbal you wish they were nonverbal. And then you have everywhere in between. There's an old saying, you met one person with autism, you met one person with autism. But that neurodiversity is such a different ability to progress. It doesn't progress at a normal rate, which makes it harder too with using ABA therapy and all the therapies out there, because you don't know what's holding back that progression, and you don't know how far someone will be able to progress, because you have some people who are nonverbal, like Armani Williams, till age 5, and now he's a NASCAR driver. Or Tarko, who was nonverbal till age three, and now he's a baseball player professionally. So that's what makes it hard in the therapy realm of autism. You don't know their full potential, and some will never progress to being able to reach their full potential, and some their full potential may be living in a group home but not scratching or biting the workers in the group home and being able to control themselves, and they'll be nonverbal. So it's a vast spectrum.
So you're saying that the limitations are so different from one to the next person that all we could do as a parent and a society is to create the skills building facilities or skill building criteria so that each person can see if their potential leads them to that. And if it doesn't, then they will maintain as the highest potential that they can function at any level.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then, it takes pressure off the parents to think that they have a kid who's nonverbal and he's 25 years old, it's not that they were a bad parent. And even if they gave 100%, sometimes the child will be nonverbal. I was just talking to a guy the other day, his son's about 27 years old, he's nonverbal, but you can tell talking to dad, the dad's done everything he can. He showed love as much as he can, but he still has to change his son's diaper. Son only can say maybe 5 or 6 words. But that son has probably reached his full potential because the dad gave 100% and used every resource he had available.
So since you have written this book, not only for people who have autism to read it and created a lot of great tips for them, but you also are giving a lot of advice to the parents and how they can be. So how can parents help their children to learn all of those social skills? And I'm positive that you gained a lot of those skills also from your mom, but also from other experts who you have interviewed for the book.
There's a saying, a proverb, iron sharpens iron. And I think the best way, and on my third book I just finished writing with Krugel's publishing in fall 2020, I interviewed 20 of the most remarkable people in the world on the autism spectrum. And all of them had one thing in common where they learned social skills. The parents put them in situations where they'd be interacting with other children. And I think that's the key to developing those skills is actually interaction. Is iron sharpens iron, so one man or woman sharpens another. And being interacting with other people will develop those skills. And autism, we know that they have great abilities and great disabilities, but in that social interaction setting, those skills can be learned.
Absolutely. And I think one of the biggest, downfall of the autism is the connectivity and relatedness in a very, very deep way and cognitively and emotionally to another human being. I mean, a lot of people who have autism, they definitely feel the attachment to their parents or sibling, but the attachment is different than actually relating to someone here and now in the present moment and connecting. So you obviously, as you said, you have a lot of great friends and you are married. So for either one of those two to have those type of relationship, platonic, great friends, or to be married, it takes certain skills and obviously even different skills to, you know, between your intimate relationship and other relationships. So how did you learn those skills from as you were growing up to learn how to be with a friend and how to connect not only cognitively but also emotionally? And then, like, how did you meet your wife and how did you create that type of an emotional bond and a romantic bond, which is the next level of emotional connection?
So I learned the ability to communicate and develop friendships mainly through art when I was a young child. Then when I got to high school age, I was one of the fastest runners in the state of Michigan for the 800 meters and the 3,200 meter relay. And having co-runners who I hung out with enabled me to learn the ability to be able to make friends. And then with relationships, I had a lot of difficulty. My first long-term relationship wasn't until I was about 30 years old. And then I met my wife on Plenty of Fish. It's a website. Thank God it wasn't Plenty of Squid or I'd still be single. And it took me dating over 300 different women before I met my wife. And I learned different social skills. Like, first seek to understand, then to be understood. I didn't just say what went on in my mind when someone would make a comment. Be interested, but not hovering. You got to be a little mean to keep them keen. In other words, you don't throw your heart out there or it'll get smashed. You got to hold back your emotions. And I learned those. I developed those skills. I refined those skills. And by doing that, I was able to be able to have a steady relationship with my wife. And after 2 years, get married. Now we're going on 7 years of marriage. We got married December 7, 2012.
Congratulations.
December 7th will be our 7-year anniversary. And then my daughter was born March 20th, 2016.
Beautiful. What is the difference for you between all of these types of connection and love, you know, between your friends and then your love, who's your man, your wife, and then having a child? All of these have a different, obviously, impact on you. What are your experiences with these impacts of different relationships?
I think that what makes me unique with autism is I don't have to have close friends all the time. And what I mean by that is my coworkers are some of my best friends, but I don't like hanging out with people a lot now. But there was a time when I was in college, I liked to hang out with my friends, go to movies, but now that I'm busy with my passion of writing and passion of traveling and speaking, I have more interconnection where I'm spending time with people in a more of a crowded area than actual one-on-one. And I find that my interaction with my coworkers is enough to feed that need for friendship. And then with my wife, being able to stay home and relax after speaking at a bunch of events, that kind of feeds that need of intimacy and being able to spend time with my daughter. But a lot of times with autism, we don't spend as much time one-on-one, where our interests kind of our passion that feeds that desire for intimacy. We find it more in our pursuits that we're doing or our special interests. And I find that even my own life is that with my daughter, we connect by, she loves jumping on beds, and I've broken my share of beds at hotels by jumping on them. I had a video of one where in Ohio where we're jumping on the bed and you hear it cracking too.
One of the things I'm noticing, Ron, is that your use of humor within any of the conversations is very natural. Was that within you, or is that also a learned skills? Because I know when I've spoken with many of the people with autism spectrum, humor is not necessarily something that comes in through natural aspect of communication or abstract thinking, as we were talking about. But you have been using humor, as we've been talking for the past, let's say, you know, 30 minutes consistently in right on cue on things that, you know, is needed. Was that something you strive to learn and put it through, or was just something natural that came to you?
Yeah, my dad has the same humor as me. One of my favorite dad stories is our neighbor had bad acne, Judy, and she was about 55 years old. And my dad said to her, "Judy, what happened to you? Did you get mauled by a bear?" And she said, "No, it's acne." And he said, "I thought once you reach menopause, the acne would go away." So I get it from my dad. He has a great sense of humor, and I've learned from him and seeing how he interacts. And sometimes he's inappropriate in his comments he makes in different social settings. And they say that a lot of people with autism or Asperger's, their dads are engineers. My dad was a head engineer and architect at GM for over 35 years before he retired.
There was actually a study that said that most of the people, even in MIT, were somehow on the Asperger spectrum, and that the reason this was one study, that the reason that the ratio of autism was going very high was because people who had the higher spectrum of the Asperger, they also married people who were similar because they either found them in colleges or engineering schools or any of that. And then since they, you know, the two genes got together, the next generation had the lower rate of autism spectrum. I don't know if there were more studies, but definitely there was one study that had that it is genetic and it's moving forward because of that. I don't know if you've heard of that research or not.
Yeah. And then there's two. Is it the opposite of autism is borderline personality disorder, because you have the autism, it's the most logical mind. You have the borderline mind, it's the most emotional. And we see too that 3 out of 4 people are borderline are female. 3 out of 4 people are autistic are males. And in the general population, about 4% of people will have autism, about 4% will have borderline personality disorder. And it's the same if you go to an elementary classroom, you'll see maybe 2 guys and the rest are all female. You go to an engineering class, you'll have 2 female and the rest are guys. So we see that it's part of the whole genetic makeup of males and females, that men are going to be more logical, women are going to be more emotional, and that spectrum of emotions, if it becomes too great, you get someone who's borderline. And if you have someone who's autistic and you have more of a logical, systematical, repetitive mind, it's going to all end up on the autism spectrum.
And so, if we get a borderline woman to marry an autistic man, then we'll have the next group to just come in with the balance, right?
Yeah, you'd either have a social worker, or you'd have probably outgoing engineer.
There you go.
But the thing is that when you see that happen, is a lot of times they drive each other nuts.
I know.
I've seen that happen before. And then these kids still can turn out autistic in the case I was thinking of.
Now, you have spoken in your book about why having a mentor is so necessary for children with autism. Say more about that.
Yeah, the reason a mentor is so important is a mentor can help you learn those skills, develop those skills. And also with autism, you have great high points, mountains of abilities, but you have also great valleys that you're unable to necessarily transform or change. So the compensation comes from the mountaintop experience and abilities rather than where the valleys are. And for me, my mentor was Dr. Jack Van Impe, who's a world-renowned TV evangelist. And I actually got to work one-on-one with him. He was filming his TV show and he hits his head and says, "I can't remember the verse." I said to him, "That's Psalms 8:2, Matthew 21:16. From lifts of children and infants, you have ordained and praise." And his TV producer said, "I'm not going to let him know." The intern showed him up. But his gift is very unique. He's able to quote word perfect 10,000 verses. And I'm able to quote 10,000 verses. So he found that I was the only other person he ever met with that ability. So he took me under his wing when I was in college and allowed me to be his intern. And those very unique gifts enable us to do things that other people aren't. And then by working with Dr. Jack Van Impe, I was able to learn how an international ministry works, how to better interact with people. And that was my special interest at that time, ministry. And it helped me refine my ability to be a minister myself and have unique experiences.
And it seems like as I read about you and I hear you, that being keen on what your interest is and really allowing you to foster that interest and move forward toward it and really experience it, not only that your skill gets better, but also because of those skills, you achieving high, your self-esteem goes higher, and you want to do it more. And that's where it doesn't feel like then you're a you're someone who has a mental illness or has a stigma, because in functionality, you can super function on some levels that will kind of, and then if you can learn other skills on the other area, then your self-esteem is high, confidence is high, level of functionality is high. And although you might have the spectrum of autism diagnosis and condition, and you will always have it, but the level of functionality in society, achievement and success can be up to par and even at times higher than someone who doesn't even have it.
Yes. And one of the things too, as I mentioned earlier, is that our development is more like the Jack in the Box. All of a sudden ability comes. And I've even, with people I've interviewed, what I do when I write someone's stories, I read their books, if they've written books or even self-published books, like some of the people I interviewed for my third book. And one of the things I noticed is that someone can be, have a great degree, and then you read their book and it's like one run-on sentence. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of times happens is they get in that education setting of higher education, all of a sudden that ability just grows at an astronomical rate rather than the typical rate where they already had some good skills and then they're working on the master's and they perfected a little more. With autism, that ability to all of a sudden grow super amounts in a very little time is astronomically important. I remember my cousin one time said, is that he used to be a baseball player and played in high school. And he says that then when you try to go to the next level, like college, the players are so much better in college. And even the people who work hard don't always reach that level.
This is wonderful information. It's great to speak with you. I'm very proud of you. It's amazing to see how you have progressed. Everyone, we're speaking to Ron Sanderson. He's the author of A Parent's Guide to Autism, A Practical Advice. You can find Ron at www.spectruminclusion, all in one word, .com, and buy his books. He's got several books, and you can find out about his speaking, where he can speak, or you could ask him to come and speak with you. Ron, I am so glad that you reached out to be on the show. It's been very, very fruitful. I've learned a lot from you, and hope that everyone who has listened to us or watched us to be able to go to your website, read the book, and you are an amazing, fresh hope for any parent who has autism or people who have autism to look at what it is that you can do in order to create an amazing, practical life. So thank you again for reaching out and being on our show. For everyone who's been with us, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Till next week, take good care of yourself. Bye-bye.